prepare yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of film.
Welcome to the podcast. I am your host, Aaron. And with me,
I'm Ethan.
And with me, as always.
You didn't have to introduce me that time.
I didn't. So this is Ethan, the lovely, the talented, and the very fertile Ethan. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm good. I am good. It's been a whirlwind couple of weeks, but my lovely wife and I are expecting our first baby in September.
Yeah, so September 26th,
I think, is the D-Day.
Day before my birthday.
Yeah.
That will not excuse.
We'll see if we can get it to wait a day just for you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, don't think that you know your wife being ready to pop is gonna like excuse you from like any birthday presents or stuff like that. So, yeah.
There is that.
But congratulations, I think that's very cool. Like I said on Facebook when they announced this to the world, is I remember the 10-year-old, or 10 years ago Ethan, the 22, 23-year-old Ethan that never wanted to have kids and they're just gonna get in the way and, you know, I don't want to share the dog food bowl with them and, you know, stuff like that to the happily married and the happily glowing Ethan. I think it's cool and congratulations. We all need a little bit more nerds in this world, so.
Oh, yes. So, and this will be a horribly, horribly spoiled nerd.
I was actually thinking about that. You know, on top of, you know, everything else, I'm actually very happy for your mother. This will be your first grandkid, right?
Oh, yes.
And she,
it will be. And when we told her, she said it, her words were, "It's about damn time."
That's great. That's great.
And I'm not exaggerating there. Those were her exact words.
Well, I mean, you have been married for, 6 weeks? Well, technically, sort of.
Well, Eric and Eunice have been married longer, and they haven't gotten it done yet. My sister is still, my sister. So.
Yeah. But I think it's very cool. I think it's very cool. I'm looking forward to it. Do you know what you want to have? Don't feed me this shit about a healthy baby. That always comes. It doesn't matter. But do you have a preference?
No, I honestly don't. I think it'll be great. Great to have a girl. Great to have a boy. To be completely honest, I just you know.
Yeah.
I don't really. I didn't really think about it too much because I'm like, what happens happens, and you know, we've decided we're gonna let the gender be a surprise. And
oh, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. I hope she has like 15 and you have like seven and seven boys and eight girls, something like that. That'd be great. But, you know, I don't know. Like, let the gender be a surprise, but it's going to be a pain in the ass when it comes to buying clothes and decorating the nursery and all that kind of stuff. But whatever. But are you still going to name it Peter if it's a boy?
No.
I didn't think you would. Very good. Well, we'll keep that part of surprise until we know what's going on there. But we aren't here to talk about the ever-growing, wonderful Parker family. But we are here tonight to talk about movies in various fashions. We actually have a full show tonight because we do have a couple of beats we do want to talk about during Geekly Happenings. We have the results of, what did we decide this was, 7th or 8th in Dawn of the War, Zone of Ruth Oz?
The eighth zone of Ruthos.
Yeah, the eighth zone of Ruthos, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we had the biggest landslide in history, so.
Probably, yes. I mean, the last one, number seven, we had really the closest.
Yeah.
We had the most votes last time, but we had the closest race last time.
Yeah, but there was no closeness tonight, this time at all, so. But
we had a good turnout, and it was a very decisive turnout.
So. Yeah. We'll talk about that more in the outro, but the main topic discussion is going to be one I kind of threw together, and truth be told, it kind of came out organically because of listening to last week's show, and it just seemed like something that we've often kind of talked a little bit about, but it's I guess we're just going to term it underrated movies, and I've been explaining this to people as this isn't the same as our guilty pleasure movies, because those are movies that we like despite the fact that they're not very good, honestly. You know, they're just fun movies that, for right. whatever reason, speak to us. That's not the case tonight. These are going to be movies that we think are, you know, excellent. These are fantastic movies, but for some reason, they do not quite get the respect they deserve. So this should be an interesting list. I know that I had all kinds of different criteria that I was, you know, cranking them out with, and I came up with some interesting results. But before we get into that, why don't we just jump right in and talk.
Ladies, gentlemen, trees, and multiforms, this is Uncool Aaron. I'm sneaking this one in on you. Yeah, this is actually one of our fabled lost episodes. But whenever I decide to put up one of the episodes that we didn't get out in time, I go ahead and cut out the geekly happenings as they are no longer relevant. So we're going to go ahead and skip right over that, and we are going to pop ourselves into our discussion of movies that we feel are underrated. And after that, we're going to unveil and name the newest member of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthoz. So here's our podcast already in progress.
So at this point, we're just going to move right on into the main topic discussion. We're going to be talking about underrated movies. Now, I kind of, I don't know, did you have any problems with this list?
You know, when I first started, I had to try to get a grasp of where this list was going to come from, and I started sort of listing a few things out, and then I started going in a different direction, and then I started going back in the same direction, and then I ended up about having about five things on the list, and then I sort of clicked something in my brain, and then another 15 got added on, and so I had to trim it from there, but you know, I really had to divorce my mind from this. Okay, this is not the guilty pleasures thing. This is something that it's not a movie that we recognize is terrible.
Right.
It's like, I recognize that this movie is bad, but I like it anyway. Uh-huh. This is not that list.
It is funny how both of our minds went there, even though we clearly set out something else. Because it did really feel an awful lot like the guilty pleasures, but at the same time, it didn't. You know, these are ones that I will argue with people that these are better than they're particularly received.
In my mind, the thing that clicked was when I decided to stop calling it the underrated movies and call it the "fuck you, it's good movies" list.
Yeah, well, I think that, I don't know. Maybe we'll be seeing the difference in our list here when we get into them. But you know, I kind of, you know, for me, it was moving away from that "fuck you, it's good" because "fuck you, it's good" is just like, you know, I like it, piss off. And I don't have I like you at piss off movies on my list. I have these are really good movies. Why doesn't everybody love these movies? And it's funny that I do have a wide variety of different kinds of movies on here. I mean, I have everything from action flicks to high drama to comedy to, you know, horror. So, I mean, it's just going to be a matter of, you know, these are movies that I feel are representative of, you know, their genres or their director or what have you, that for whatever reason, I don't really feel get the praise that they deserve.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is weird. I'll probably point it out after I'm done, but I did notice an interesting pattern that ended up happening with my list. So, okay.
Yeah, mine started to go in a strange direction, and I decided to fix that.
Yeah.
When I trimmed it. So,
okay.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one, I think. But this is definitely a list that I, you know, really, there's not much more to say about it other than we divorced it from that sort of notion of, you know, the guilty pleasures. Sure, we obviously take pleasure in seeing these movies because we like it, but really, I just sort of looked at this as these are movies that generally people don't like, or people have said or bitched about, or critics bitched about, and I just sort of see it as rather unfounded because it's a good movie, you know? So.
Well, I mean, I definitely have movies on this list that just got torn apart critically or people hate, but I also do have some movies on here that are relatively well received. I have a couple of these that are Best Picture nominees, for God's sakes, but I, you know, like the one I'm thinking about off the top of my head, I just don't think that, you know, despite the praise it does get, I don't think it gets enough. So I guess we'll just get into that as we get going. But I think you're right. There isn't much to say about this other than to just kind of get moving on our list and kind of explain where we're coming from here. So with that point, what's your number six?
My number six is it's an oldie. It's from, I think, 1988. And it's a movie that a lot of people just forget about, and I think there's a lot more to it than really people give credit for. And it's the movie. It's called Without a Clue. This is a movie starring Michael Caine and Ben Kingsley.
Yep.
And it's a comedy, and it's a comedy about Sherlock Holmes, where if what if the real criminal genius or the detective genius was Watson instead of Holmes, and Holmes was an actor he hired.
Yeah.
I have a lot of fond memories of watching this movie as a kid, and I recently rewatched it because I just got it on DVD. It's not on Blu-ray. It's definitely one of those that I think just people forget about and don't really care about. But we're talking, you know, two, you know, Academy Award winners in this movie. And I was watching this movie and I realized, you know, the people that were in it, you know, you have the actor that plays Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh yeah,
is in this movie as Moriarty, and then you have
Paul Frees.
Yes.
Yeah, Paul Frees.
And it's it's as a comedy, you know, you could take it or leave it. But with all the great stuff going on with Sherlock Holmes lately, I got to thinking about it a lot more. And it's a lot of fun. It's a fun movie. It's 1988, and it was directed by Thom E. Eberhardt.
Thom.
And Jeffrey Jones is in it.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, Thom.
Yeah, that's Tom.
And Jeffrey Jones is in it. Jeffrey Jones is Inspector Lestrade. But it's got Nigel Davenport in it, Peter Cook, just a lot of great, really some great character actors that show up in the movie. And it's just sort of this off-the-wall movie that, you know, if they did now, they would fuck it up type of movie. But it's not too silly. It's not too over the top. It's still a fun, smart comedy, and it's just not a movie that a lot of people really remember. Or a lot of people had a lot of fun memories of. I was looking at it on Rotten Tomatoes, and it had a 56% critic rating on it. You know,
so
it's not one.
Right.
And I think that's the highest rating one that's on my list. Of the ones that were on here, and so without a clue, I highly recommend people go try it. Sometimes it'll pop up on like Amazon Instant Video or something, but the DVD is available, and I recommend going and checking it out. Unfortunately, the DVD that's available is only a pan and scan version, so
that's too bad.
Yeah, okay, but it's a good one. Have you seen it?
Oh yeah, hell yeah! You're talking to probably one of the biggest Sherlock Holmes fans, you know. You know, when you're talking about this, I don't know why, but Murder by Decree kept on popping up into my head. You remember that one? It was the Sherlock Holmes looking for Jack the Ripper. That's one of those ones that I
love. Oh,
Is that what it's called? Murder by Decree? I can't remember what the fuck it is, but I liked it. I remember that.
That sounds about right, but
yeah, I like that one.
Yeah.
I was actually on Facebook arguing with people about Jack the Ripper, and somebody's all like, "Yeah, but From Hell was good." I'm like, "No, it isn't." And then they're all like, "Well, what's a good smart ass? What's a good Jack the Ripper movie?" I said, "Well, how about Time Enough at Last and Murder by Decree? You know, H.G. Wells chasing down fucking Jack the Ripper to modern day.
I think that was Time and Again.
Time and Again, yeah. Sherlock Holmes chasing, or H.G. Wells chasing down Sherlock Holmes to modern day frickin', it was 1975 San Francisco. It was pretty off.
Yeah, chasing down Jack the Ripper, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. And Jack the Ripper was, David Warner, Ra's al Ghul himself. Okay.
I know, that sort of stems a bit from the, are you watching that new show Ripper Street? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I've been watching that.
Cool.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, last week it didn't really catch my attention, but it's also not really about Jack the Ripper. I mean, it takes place after the murders, and you know, there's all this wacky shit going on, but it's a hell of a lot better than From Hell. I'll give you that much. But that movie blew. Okay, at this point,
we're
moving on to my number six. This is one that I'm just going to put it on my number six because I feel like we've been talking about it a lot lately. But and I do think it's an incredibly underrated movie. But it is, I think it's 2006, 2007. I don't remember, but it was directed by Steven Spielberg. It was Munich. I think it popped up as your number two, number three last week for our Spielberg show. But yeah, I think that this movie is incredibly underrated. Yeah, granted, it was nominated for Best Picture and Best Director. But I think that some of the better things about it are some of the performances in it. I think that Eric Bana turned in some of the best work of his career in it. You know, I think that Jeffrey Rush proved once again why, you know, I consider him one of the best just dependable actors out there. I mean, he was very excellent in this. Daniel Craig was good in this. One of the things that I liked about it is a lot of people talked about the politics of it, and I'm honestly not really familiar enough with the politics to really say much. And on top of that, I was not even born when this movie happened. And so I read about it in school and stuff like that. But one of the things that I thought that the politics of the situation took away was it feels weird to even say it, but I kind of liked the way that violence was depicted in this movie. It was nasty. And it wasn't like Saving Private Ryan nasty, but there was just something that he did so well that where he just made the violence seem really off-putting. In a way, it reminded me of the violence in The Godfather, where he would just where Coppola would just do something strange with the violence to make it stand out. But when I think of that movie, like the two main scenes that pop up in my head are when they accidentally use too much explosive and blows out the wall of the blows up the room where the guy's in and the wall of the people next door, and there's a couple next door, and they were running out just stark ass naked, and you know, the girl was deaf or blind, I don't remember, and you know, just showed that there's major consequences of that. And then the second the second thing I think about is when they went to go assassinate the girl that killed the old guy.
Yeah.
And that's just, I just can't put my finger on it, but that was just such an off-putting scene, because they walk in with their weird little spy stick gun things, and, you know, she's trying to, you know, slut her way out of it, and, you know, she opens her robe, and she's like, you know, hey, maybe we can work this out, and then they just pop her with this gun, and, you know, she's, like, walking over to the table and sitting down and, you know, dying, and they're sitting there talking about the guns, like, you know, how do I do this? Oh, no, twist it. No, you need to pull that thing out, and then you do, and it's just, I can't explain it, but it's such an excellent movie. I know that you like it a lot, but it's one that I thought fit very well on this list, and honestly, thinking about it, it was what kind of got me on this path to where I wanted to do this underrated movies list.
Cool.
So, okay, that's my number six. At this point, what would you say is your number five?
My number five is Wolverine.
X-Men Origins?
The Hugh Jackman, you know, X-Men Origins Wolverine movie.
I enjoy that movie.
You know, and this is one I like to say that I liked it better when I saw it on the small screen rather than the big screen. Because I saw this in theaters, and it's it was decent, it was okay, you know, it earned the ire of fans, you know, worldwide, and a lot of people bitch and moan and gripe about it, and it's got a 38% critic rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but I you know, picked up, this was actually the first Blu-ray I ever bought, and I sat and I was watching it, and I'm like going, you know, this movie is not bad, this movie is actually pretty good. It's got some fun action in it. It's got, it's Wolverine kicking some ass and taking some names, and, you know, following up Munich with this one is obviously, two totally different ballparks, but, I think Wolverine is, highly underrated, and I think a lot of people gripe and moan about it when they really need to get their head out of their ass.
Yeah, this is one that
it's my number five.
Yeah, I mean, other than X-Men 2, this is easily my favorite of the X-Men franchise. Easily. And, you know, when I think about it, I almost would rather watch the Wolverine versus X-Men 2, because I think Paul from the Magnum Boardcast pointed it out to me, that it is a really top-heavy movie where the coolest thing happens in the first scene and the rest of it just kind of pales in comparison. But I think Wolverine's overall pretty good. I think that I think that one of the things that makes people just get just bent the fuck out of shape about it was Deadpool. And if you know anything about Deadpool fans, they are some of the most vocal, most annoying comic book fans in the world. So I liked it, and I especially liked Liev Schreiber in it. They got an actor instead of a body, and it really worked really well, I thought. And
he did a great job playing that sinister that sinister animosity that yeah. Sabretooth has, and it worked real well.
And when did he become such a monster? I mean, like, I remember him from the Scream movies, and he just looked like a regular guy. And now every time you see him, he's just this huge motherfucker, and I don't think I realize how big of a guy he is until I saw
him. I don't know,
this.
Yeah.
But it happened.
It did. And so it made it to my number five. And it's just one of those, really, I don't get why people don't like it. You know, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I honestly think it's the Deadpool thing. I mean, other than that, I got no answer, and I think that's a pretty stupid reason to dismiss this movie, considering he's not a very big part in it at all. Okay, sure. At this point, to where my list doesn't come across as, you know, as hoity-toity as my first one I picked, I'm going to go along the same lines as Ethan did, and we can argue about this all we want, Ethan, if you want to, but we can call it a tie, I'm just going to say the series, but I've decided to say Taken. Both one and two. I think that most of the animosity in that series kind of goes more towards the second, but it is a largely dismissed movie. And, you know, I'm not the biggest action movie fan in the world. I mean, I like them as much as the next guy sometimes. I'd probably rather watch a well-acted drama any old day of the week, but, you know, I'm still male, and I still like seeing, you know, stuff happen. And, you know, to me, the people, it feels like there's this overall feeling of dismissal for this movie. Like, oh, it's just another stupid fucking action movie, which makes me stop and take pause because I'm like, have you seen it? Because this movie kind of strikes me as the response of the people that complained about, you know, Mel Gibson doing karate in the fucking, the Lethal Weapon movies or John McClane being able to run across broken glass when he's just a beat cop and, you know, kind of complaining about that over-the-top superhero-ness of, you know, like some of these 90s action movies when you have in this movie, it's, you know, starring Liam fucking Neeson, and he's not, I mean, Liam Neeson's a big guy and he's in pretty good shape, but he's like probably 60, 61 years old. And, you know, he's an old guy, but the way that he's able to do what he's doing is because, you know, like the line in the movie says, you know, he's had very specific training, you know, with a very specific set of, what did he say? Talents. And, unlucky for the bad guys in the movie, you know, it just so happens that the way they're fucking him over is something that he is explicitly trained to be able to do. And so that's kind of what I like about it is because, and they do spend some time on, you know, he's trying to get back with his daughter and, you know, stuff like that. You know, but, you know, obviously it's just an action movie. But, you know, I don't know if you've seen the second one or not. And I do like the first one better. I don't want it to sound like that. But, like, the second one got a lot of shit on Rotten Tomatoes. And, it caused me to not go see it in the theater because everyone's all like, oh, my God, it's boring. It's tired. It's, you know, the same old thing again. So I'm like, oh, fuck. So whatever. Then I noticed it was on pay-per-view, and I had nothing to do, so I got it. And I watched it, and I kind of liked it quite a bit. One of the things I really liked about it wasn't like, you know, they took his daughter again, you know, retaken the sequel. Or, you know, it wasn't that story at all. Basically what it was is a group of people that took him and Famke Janssen and for all the people that he killed in the first movie. Yeah, it was a group of terrorists that were related to some of the people that he killed, and they wanted, you know, revenge on him. And I thought that was kind of cool because it's an ongoing continuity throughout the movies. You know, it showed that there was actually repercussions for this, you know, horrible amount of violence and murder and killing and stuff that happened in the first one. And I think that I do think that these movies could be seen as a response to the people that roll their eyes at the over-the-top, you know, 80s, 90s action movies. And I just find these movies largely dismissed. And I don't get it because I love the first one. And I think the second one will grow on me because there is a scene in it where he goes hand-to-hand with a guy probably, you know, 15, 20 years younger than him. And, you know, he ends up winning, but barely, and he's limping through the rest of the movie. I mean, you see the Lethal Weapon movies, and people get fucking shot, and the next scene, they're not bleeding. But in this, he gets his ass kicked, and he's limping for the rest of the movie. And I just enjoyed that amount of detail that went into it. And another real quick thing, and I'll let you say your piece, is one of my favorite things about those movies is how at the very beginning of the very first movie, when they showed him in the shop when he was reading about that karaoke machine for his daughter, he had scratches and shit on his face. You know, that kind of led to the whole, you know, maybe, you know, all this extracurricular stuff that he does with his, you know, with his buddies from the old job is still part of his life. And, you know, just little detail like that, I think, is one of those things that makes me wonder why these are just largely dismissed. I think they're good movies for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But,
no, and I actually haven't seen the second one.
You should. It's
but I've seen the first one. I want to see the second one. It just was one of those, came out at a time I just couldn't get out to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely want to see it, because I love the first one. The first one is a great movie. I remember that first one was one of those surprise hits that came out, because it came out really when nothing else was out there that looked even remotely interesting.
Yeah.
And so it came out and it was like, hey, I want to go. I'm up for seeing Liam Neeson kick someone's ass for an hour and a half. And it turned out to be a good movie, you know?
Yeah.
And I totally get what you're saying as far as those movies where you have those action movies where the main hero is essentially a superhero. I mean, you watch any of the Die Hard movies, pretty much John McClane is a superhero.
Yeah.
Especially in the most recent one. But in this one, he's not a superhero. You know, it's he's a guy who has these specific skills. He's good at what he does, but he's not invulnerable. You know, he does get the shit beat out of him, and he has that sort of element to him of fragility, but he still is a badass. You still are like, yeah, he's going to kick your ass. It's going to suck for him, but he's going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love Taken, and I really do want to see the second one.
It's good. Check it out. I mean, I'm not going to call it as good as the first one, but it doesn't. I mean,
sure.
Last I looked, it had a maybe upper 20s on Rotten Tomatoes, and fuck no. I mean, it was way more interesting than that, I thought. And especially, like, some of the I think Ed just said, you know, it's just more of the same old bullshit. And I'm like, well, that sucks. And then I watched it, and I'm all like, it really wasn't, because, you know, again, I enjoyed that there was that continuity, that there were actually, you know, he killed 30 or 50 some people in the first movie. It says on the IMDb page, and there's actually repercussions for that. I think that's good, because, you know, you kill one person, there's going to be repercussions. You know, 50,
yeah,
there's going to be a lot more repercussions, especially when you're killing people like that. So I enjoyed it. So I just said the Taken series for my number five.
That's a good choice. It's a good choice, and I need to check out that second one when I can.
Yep, that's a good one. Okay, what's your number four?
My number four is a movie I have not thought about in years. I saw this movie in theaters, and I was surprised to look around, and it's a movie, another movie a lot of people have forgotten that this, and some people that remember it just go, oh, it's not that good, it's okay, blah, blah, blah. It's Suicide Kings.
I like that movie.
And
Christopher Walken.
So do I. It's a great Christopher Walken, you know, movie. It's a great movie to watch Christopher Walken be Christopher Walken in, and where he's not some crazy ascot wearing psychopath, but he is in fact a crime boss. And then you also add in there, you got Dennis Leary really doing a bang up job being basically his enforcer guy. That's sort of this enforcer with a conscience thing. I like this movie. It's a really good one. It's a good sort of a crime kidnapping caper type of movie. It's kind of hard to sort of qualify what it is, but you have this great interaction of all these yuppie or preppy preppy college guys who kidnap this big mob boss to basically get to fix this problem, and obviously they went about it in a really stupid way. And really, it's a movie I watch for Christopher Walken, because he's so good in it. And he's just, you can just see him, he's pretty much duct taped to a chair for about 90% of the movie. And he just sits there and owns this movie. He owns everyone in the scenes that he's in. He just kicks their ass without even getting up. It's a good one. It's a good one. And a lot of people just, for some reason, don't really like it, and I don't understand why. You know, I saw this in theaters. I've seen it. I need to go watch it again, because I haven't watched it in a while. But it's a good one.
It is a good one. I honestly haven't thought about it in years, but I did like it. And you are right. It is largely dismissed, and a lot of people are like, it just strikes me as a direct-to-video piece of shit. And I'm like, You probably haven't seen it then.
Huh. Yeah, because it was in theaters. I remember it being in theaters.
I do too. I'm pretty sure I saw it in theaters. I was going through a walk-in kick around the time that movie came out, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Okay. I just don't get the ire on that one.
I don't
personally.
Know.
So what's your number four?
Well, my number are we on four? Yeah, my number four.
Yes.
Is a movie that it's come up tangentially on a couple of our past shows when we're all like, you know, well, yeah, we should do that. We should do that one on a movie that. Well, we should do this movie on a list of movies that just were, you know, marketed very poorly. And I don't think I could come up with 10 movies that are marketed very poorly. And they aren't jumping out of me right now off the top of my head.
It would be a lot of M. Night Shyamalan movies.
Well, yeah, but that'd be like the flip side. Yeah, that looked really cool. Turned out it sucked. But, you know, stuff like that. No, this is the 2002 Roger Mitchell flick, Changing Lanes. That thing starring Ben Affleck and Samuel L. Jackson. Now, this is a movie that they probably should have fucking sued whoever they got to market it.
Oh, yeah.
Because this movie was marketed as Samuel L. Jackson, you know, calling Ben Affleck a motherfucker and Ben Affleck driving around in a Mercedes and chasing themselves all over the city and, you know, some sort of car chase movie. And, God, no, that was not what this movie was. Not by any stretch of the imagination. This was a smart, psychological thriller, for lack of a better word, where Ben Affleck and Sam Jackson get into a car accident. I don't remember what Ben Affleck is doing. Sam Jackson's on his way to a custody hearing with his ex-wife and his kids, and he's playing an ex-alcoholic, and makes him late for his court appointment, and he loses the case, and, you know, Ben Affleck is... Ben Affleck left an envelope accidentally on Sam Jackson's car, and then, you know, he calls him up, says he wants it, and Sam Jackson is obviously, you know, pretty fucking annoyed about everything that's going on, and, you know, he tells him he's not going to give it to him, and so, you know, he's just kind of seething a little bit at that, and then Ben Affleck goes in and starts fucking with Sam Jackson's credit, you know, his credit score and stuff, and then it turns into a big-ass, you know, you know, again, it was just like a kind of a psychological thriller where they were just upping the ante all the way across the board. And, you know, one of the things I really like about it is it didn't end with a stupid gunfight at the end or something like that. It ended with, you know, realistically in the fact that all the fucking with Sam Jackson's credit didn't get fixed. It was still fucked with. And, you know, they came to an understanding. And there was just a nice scene where he tells him, I'm sorry. And he's like, I know. And it is a really good movie that I think a lot of people probably didn't see because of the shitty marketing, but I really enjoyed this movie a lot. I think it's one of the better Sam Jackson performances in a long time. So I picked it from a number four.
Yeah, and had I remembered this movie, I would have actually put it on my list, because it is a really good one, and it is one that people just really just don't remember, and it's because nobody went to go see it. And I completely agree that the marketing on this was terrible, because I remember seeing the trailer for it and going, eh, it looks kind of stupid. And then I don't know how I managed to see it, but I saw it, I think it was
on
DVD later.
I'm pretty sure I said, watch
it. And I was like, that was absolutely nothing like the trailer. I mean... That was good. And, you know, it was a refreshing movie to watch, because you had that sort of, instead of them basically coming to this boiling point and exploding and basically one of them killing the other and doing all that stuff, they actually managed to reach a point in the movie where they actually calmed down and talked to each other. Whereas throughout the whole movie, you're pretty much saying, okay, you know, if both these guys just calm the fuck down and talk to each other,
and neither of them were totally in the right or totally in the wrong.
No.
None of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not a Samuel Jackson is terrorizing Ben Affleck or Ben Affleck's, you know, being a dick to this. It's like, no, it's they're both wrong. They both need to apologize. And then they both need to be adults and actually work through this.
Yeah. It's an excellent one.
And it's a good one. It's a good one. It's another one I haven't watched in a long time, but it's, and it's one that, I don't even know if they put it out on Blu-ray.
They probably did.
But it's a good one.
Yep, I like it a lot. I like it a lot. Okay, what's your number three?
Now, this is a movie I believe you introduced me to, and I was amazed to find out that a lot of people just don't like it. And, you know, I was like, really? Okay. Because you and I are huge fans of the three and the Four Musketeers. This is the unofficial third movie in the trilogy. It's The Man in the Iron Mask.
You're fucking kidding me. That's my number three also.
Awesome.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah. Hey, who knew?
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Yeah,
it's
it
got
is.
A kick-ass cast. It's a fun, you know, action adventure, you know, swashbuckling type of movie that's got a good storyline. Nobody in it is absolutely terrible where you want to gouge your eyes out with a rusty spoon.
Everybody's pretty good in it.
I know, everyone's good in it. The story's good, the action's fun. It's just like, why do people not like this? I don't understand.
Leonardo DiCaprio. That's my only answer.
Yeah, it had to have been the anti DiCaprio stuff going around
fresh
at the time.
Off Titanic. Well, now this movie probably
he was good.
Yeah, this movie probably came out in 96, 97, because I do know that it was directed by Randall Wallace, the screenplay writer for Braveheart. And I think that he got this made off of the strength of Braveheart.
Yes. Yes. And this is good. It's you know, you got Gabriel Byrne in there
underused. I love Gabriel Byrne, and he's not in anything anymore. He was D'Artagnan.
And he vanished. Yeah. He vanished. And this was back when we were like, he could be Gabriel fucking Byrne. I mean, this guy's bought me Usual Suspects, and this is badass. And then he did a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then he stopped. Didn't disappear.
He had a TV show that was on like CBS for a season. Also, it really was too bad.
That's too bad. And but I mean, you've also got Jeremy Irons, who is hit and miss. He does good movies and then he does awful movies. And then John Malkovich and Gerard Depardieu. And this is sort of at the end of the whole Gerard Depardieu thing, and here in the United States. But but it's a good one. And you had this Leonardo DiCaprio pulling off these two roles. That are decidedly different roles, but decidedly well acted because he's Leonardo DiCaprio. Goddammit. I don't get why this movie. A lot of people just don't like it. And I mean, had a 33% rating from critics. I'm like, really?
I don't get it at all. It was well acted. It was a very loose adaptation of 30 years after, Man in the Iron Mask. Also, the some of the action was laughable, like D'Artagnan throwing a rapier through a fountain from 30 feet away and stabbing a dude.
Yes.
But you know, I mean, that's kind of the stuff that you like. Beautiful set pieces, nice music.
But it was a strong enough movie and strong enough actors that I accept it as if I'm watching the Three Musketeers and the Four Musketeers. I can roll right on it watching this and be fine.
Yep. And you know, I was gonna mention in this that I'm not gonna put it on my list, but I would honorable mention the Three and the Four Musketeers, because first off, I consider them one movie. I don't give a crap if they aren't, but I consider them one movie.
Yeah.
And to me, I do not understand how we live in a world where the Three and the Four Musketeers are out there and there's any discussion whatsoever about the best Musketeer movie ever. I don't understand that. I don't understand it. They are by far, but clearly, the superior.
It's one of those things that if you run into people who have seen those, they completely agree with you.
Unless they're women.
The problem is,
women don't seem to like these movies very much, and I don't get it.
Ah, whatever.
Weird.
I don't understand it. But a Man in the Iron Mask is good. It's your number three as well.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I was just going to say that I don't really see anything about this movie to attack beyond Leonardo DiCaprio. And, you know, I've been a Leonardo DiCaprio supporter since I was a teenager. So I'm far from that. But, you know, at the same time, it was going to be, all right, let's say for the sake of argument that Leonardo DiCaprio isn't any good. What about the rest of the cast? What about the story? What about what about the Providence? You know, that was based off of the Dumas books. What about the sets? What about the music? What about the swordplay? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't see anything in here that isn't enjoyable. Honestly, I don't get it. I mean, this one is a really good example of what we're getting at with this list. I mean, you know, argue all you want, but Volcano still fucking sucks. You might like it, Ethan, but you get it. It's not that good of a movie.
No, that's why it's on my guilty pleasures list. I recognize that it's a bad movie.
See, this one I just like it. And I don't.
This one is just a. This is a good movie.
I know.
This is a good movie.
Completely agree. That's why it's. I love this movie. This is one of those ones I love to watch with people and it's like, see, motherfucker, yeah. It is a good movie. God damn it, but you know. Okay, that's my number three. What's your number two?
Well, my number two is actually a movie that came out last year that I've grown quite fond of. It's John Carter.
That was
again,
a good movie.
I
really liked
what's that?
I liked that movie. It was a good movie.
See, there you go. And I've run into people who just, you either love it or you hate it. And I've run into a lot of people that are like, oh, that movie sucked. And I'm like, I don't get why it was. I thought it was good. You know, it was really beautifully shot. It had great effects. I thought the guy who was John Carter, whatever his name is, wasn't bad at all. He was playing this character who's a real two-dimensional character from the pulps.
Yeah.
Accurately, you know, and they took some liberties here and there, but you know, it's, you got Mark Strong in here being a badass. Mark Strong. Then you got, the guy from The Wire who doesn't seem to ever actually be able. He plays great villains, but never actually gets into good movies. Except for he was the villain in 300.
Well,
sort of.
This is a good movie.
Yeah, and you know the effects, and I don't remember. Was it this was released in 3D? I think, and
yeah,
I didn't see it in 3D.
Yeah, I didn't. I saw it on Blu-ray. My father-in-law has it, and I borrowed it from him, and I liked it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's one of those that I sort of cite and look at, and I just don't understand why people didn't go see it, because it was really good, and it was marketed terribly. Disney just totally screwed the pooch on that one, and there's a lot of stories as to why that they screwed that up, and you know, believe what you will about studio heads and you know, politics and all that crap. But I mean, bottom line is, it's this movie and the other movie I've talked endlessly about, Dread, last year, that are two movies that just absolutely tanked at theaters. And it upsets me that I won't get another one, because I would like to see these movies continue. I'd like to see another John Carter. I'd like to see another Dread. I'd like to see, you know, the continuing adventures of John Carter on Mars. And I think that would be a lot of fun. I think the formula they used in this movie, the effects were great. The actors were great. The designs were really interesting.
I love the production design of this movie. I thought it was so interesting looking.
I mean, and I got when I was working at that marketing place, I got a book, design art book, basically about John Carter and the movie John Carter. It was a really cool book because it's all about the creature design and all that stuff. And I'm almost like, I don't understand why people didn't go see this. This is really neat.
Yeah.
And so it had to hit number two, and that's probably just because of the freshness of the wound.
Yeah, I mean, it may, you know, I mean, this is one we could probably chalk a lot of it up to marketing. And I think that Disney is obviously marketing, but they're really hugely to blame. If you remember, like a week after this movie came out, they're like, yeah, fuck it, it's dead in the theaters. And, you know, they should have said that. I mean, I remember that.
Yeah, they threw in the towel on this one way too quick, and I just didn't understand why they gave up on it.
And
you know,
I think
it's like, don't have faith in it.
I think they screwed up with the title. Who's going to go see a movie called John Carter? If you call it John Carter of Mars, you know, okay, maybe it might catch that, you know, they're not the people who are on the internet like you and me looking at all these movies, but they're at the theater and, you know, they're looking for something they want to see and like, you know, they're looking up at the marquee and they see John Carter. Oh no, I already, what is that, a sequel to Coach Carter? Fuck that. I don't like Denzel Washington. I mean, it just wasn't there's a lot of stuff they did wrong, but I do think that they kind of betrayed this movie, you know, before they showed.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, studio and a director and stuff like that should be like a parent with their kids. You know, never badmouth them in public. You know, I mean, always throw your support behind it. You know, because first off, it just makes, you know, good financial sense. But you know, somebody and a lot of somebodies, you know, put a lot of time, a lot of money in this. And, you know, for a week later when it didn't even do that bad at the box office, I mean, it didn't do great, but I think it turned in a $50, $60 million opening weekend. And if I remember right, it made most of its budget back by the time they'd said that. So I was just all like, huh.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, I don't understand. And this is so much more on the fans, you know. I mean, it had a 51% critic rating, and the fans were sort of split down the middle on it too. But the studio did, and Disney does a lot of great things. I love them, but
yeah,
I don't understand why they gave up on this one so quick.
You know, they probably spent too much money on a untested franchise also. You know, like I expect the Lone Ranger to fail, honestly.
They spent
too much money on too old of a franchise. You know, maybe they should have been more conservative and did a $50 million budget instead of a fucking $200 mm-hmm. million dollar budget like they did on John Carter. But okay.
Yeah.
Now, my number two is one that there's going to be some argument about whether or not, it's considered underrated, but I think it's hugely underrated. I'm not remembering the year off the top of my head, but it was just maybe 4 or 5 years ago. But it's a Clint Eastwood flick, Gran Torino. I don't get it. I mean, it didn't get any Oscar nominations. It did good at the theater. Actually, I think it's, not counting inflation, I think it's his most successful movie money-wise. But there seems to be this thing. Go ahead.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. There seems to be this thing with Clint Eastwood where people don't have a memory. Because a lot of people like to say, oh, ha, 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 he's senile because he was talking to an empty chair at the Republican, you know, whatever. And then, you know, people's personal politics will get in the way. Well, fuck him because I'm a Democrat. And, you know, just not even talking about the movie yet. You know, we got Clint fucking Eastwood here. If you know anything about the guy, you would know that he supported Obama in the last election. He supported,
Kerry?
No, not Kerry. He supported, son of a bitch, John McCain, and he supported Clinton, and you look throughout his years, and he really is somebody that literally does seem to think about his politics. I mean, he is not straight across the board, but, you know, fuck his politics, as far as I'm concerned. I know I've had people tell me that we should have let him into Ruth Oz because he's a goddamn Republican. I'm like, well, no, he's not, and also that's not the goddamn point. But, no, this is a movie that I think is really good. It's one of the few movies, you know, spoiler alert, I guess, but it's one of the few movies that Clint Eastwood's character dies in, which is, you know, rare, but I think that's beside the point. I just actually watched it this week, and I think I caught it on, like, TNT or something, and it was pretty cool seeing that edited for television, I gotta say. But,
racist melon farmer.
You racist melon farmer. There is some, to coin a term that I've been using too much lately, but there's some genuine pathos going on in that movie. I mean, the movie opens up at Clint Eastwood's wife's funeral, and he's fucking mean mugging his grandkids that just don't get him, and they're dressed in football jerseys and, you know, clothes like that, and his, 16-year-old granddaughter isn't interested, and she's texting, and he's just growling, like, what's wrong with these fucking kids? And he kind of, goes throughout the movie. He has his discussions with the young father, the young priest guy, and, you know, he comes to terms with it at the end when he's giving his, confessions, and he realizes that, you know, maybe his family is like this because he wasn't close to them, and so, you know, it's a two-way street. Obviously there's the growth of what's going on with his neighbor. Jap this and rice burner that and, you know, get off my lawn. I used to stack, I'll blow a hole in your face and go inside and sleep like a baby. But, you know, he grows to respect these people. He goes over and he's open to their culture, likes their food, and, becomes friends with this with the teenage kid and Tao. And, I just really like that movie a lot. I it was my favorite movie line. I actually felt bad that I left it out of my 2000 to 2010 list, because I love that fucking movie. So yeah, it's my number two, because I think that some people that just aren't as familiar with Clint Eastwood just like to dismiss him, and for his politics, I think that's ridiculous. I really like this guy, and I like his movies, and I think that this is amongst the best he's ever done with very little recognition. And I know you like it too, right, yeah. Ethan?
It's a great movie. Yeah, I own it on Blu-ray, and I think I showed it to my mom, and she really liked it too. And it's a good one. I mean, it's definitely with sort of in the same line as Munich. You know, it's like I was flabbergasted that this didn't get the recognition that I felt it should have gotten. You know, and I don't think this got any nominations at the Oscars.
It did not.
Which I look back and I just go, really? Come on, did you watch the movie?
Yeah.
Or did you just look at the trailer? This is another one that the trailer really didn't sell what the movie was really about.
Not at all.
This is a fantastic movie. I really, really, really love it. And it was up until this year, obviously, it was Eastwood's last acting job.
Yeah. He did The Trouble at the Curve, and that was I saw that. It was okay. I mean, it's actually nowhere near my list, but I do think that movie kind of got a bad rap too. I liked it. I liked What's Her Face in it.
Yeah, well, it had the unfortunate thing of also with the Republican National Convention thing.
Yeah,
so
that definitely didn't.
But no, Gran Torino is a fantastic movie. It's great, and you know, it didn't end up on my list mainly because I forgot that people don't really think about it, and it's like
sometimes it's hard
I just
to
sort of take it for granted
bubble.
That it's a good movie.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to think outside of our bubble, but you know, I do have some friends that are all like, "Fuck Clint Eastwood," and I'm like, I don't understand the words that are coming out of your mouth. I don't know why you can say this. I mean, you know, fuck his politics, because at least he's thinking. You know, I mean, you might not agree with him, but, you know, hey. But, you know, all that aside the point, I thought this was a really good movie, and I do think it kind of got the shaft. Okay, at this point, it looks like we're going to be moving on to our number one, the movie that we think is highly, highly, highly underrated. So, Ethan, what's your number one?
Okay, looks like with all the jockeying around on my list, my number one has settled at being the Thomas Jane Punisher movie.
Oh, yeah? I like that movie, too.
And I love it, actually, and it's one that you and I saw in theaters together, and we were sort of eh about it, and then with each subsequent viewing, it's really grown on me, and I have grown to really like it.
Comparing it to Warzone? Hell yeah.
Well, yes, Warzone was available anyway. This movie has a lot of has had a lot of negativity with it. It's not a perfect movie. I'll completely agree with you on that. I think that when they released the director's cut, it turned it created a much better, stronger movie. Really, Thomas Jane is still, I think, the quintessential and the best Punisher that has ever made it to film. And I really wish. What's that?
To be fair, there are three. You know, he's
the
best.
To be fair, there are three. Which is more than you could say about, you know, some others, you know.
There's been more than Hulk. Well, I guess there's been more than Hulks.
Yeah, three Hulks. I guess technically there will be three Superman.
Yeah.
Four Batman.
Yeah.
On film. Well, five if you include Adam West, you know.
Six if you count Conroy.
Exactly. But you know, the Punisher, this movie, and really with the exception of Travolta in the movie, because I really think they wasted that part on Travolta. I think they could have saved a lot of money and had someone else do that part.
Completely.
But it's still a good movie. It's still cool. You know, you had some great. It felt sort of like really hearkening back to those over-the-top 80s action movies, and it's still the best interpretation of Punisher that we've got, and I really liked it, so it's made it to my number one. 29% on Rotten Tomatoes.
See, I don't get that. I mean, I don't really remember being mad about it, but I do remember liking it quite a bit. I mean, I remember walking out thinking they should have got somebody besides John Travolta, because he probably wasn't worth the $10 million they had to pay him for it. You know, I didn't feel like there's anything about that role that screamed Travolta other than maybe that name recognition. But, you know, this is a movie.
Yeah.
I was sad when Thomas Jane didn't return for Warzone, and then I saw Warzone. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it.
Oh, he read the script.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I get you now. I don't even know, you know, how we're going to do this, so I'm just going to say it right off the bat. I can't think about this movie now without thinking about the short film that he did last year. It called Dirty Laundry or Loose Chain? No, Dirty Laundry. And that was so cool. I mean, it made me about throw up because of all the broken bones, and I don't handle broken bones well in movies, but that was really cool. And I was really hoping that was going to turn into something, but it doesn't look like it's going to, and that's too bad because I like Thomas Jane.
Yeah.
And obviously he's kind of tied down to what the director wants and the scripts that he get. But I would love to see him take another stab at Frank Castle. I mean, granted, I'm not that big of a Punisher fan, but I liked him for what it was.
Yeah, Marvel's got the right. The Marvel Studios has the rights to it now, and I'd love to see them do something with it. And because he did this movie, I don't think they're going to go back to using him, and that really annoys me. And it's that same thing I have with the Thing in Fantastic Four with him. It's I just don't see them going back to using him, even though he was such a perfect casting. And that little short that he did last year was several levels of awesome. And if you hear him talk about that in an interview, he talks about it. Said they actually did that, you know, with the hopes that maybe something would happen, but really he did it because he loves the Punisher character and wanted to basically.
Did you hear him on the Nerdist? Because I just listened to that a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
He's a different. He comes across differently than I would have expected him to. He comes across very artsy fartsy in my craft, but it was cool to listen to him talk about this. And he's a big comic book fan. That's cool.
Oh yes.
He owns his own. He owns his own publisher even. So yeah, it's a good one.
It's pretty awesome. And this one was a good one. So what's your number one?
Well, my number one, I mean, we're obviously have two different lists here. My number one is the one that I had the most.
Except for number three.
Yeah, other than that, I guess. We're right on target there. But my number one is the one I had the most confliction putting on my list, because I do think that it is a pretty well-respected movie, but I don't think it's well-respected enough. I mean, it was up for Best Picture and Director and Actor and supporting actor, and that's just off the top of my head. I know it probably was up for more, but it was the 1941 Charlie Chaplin film, The Great Dictator. Now, I understand that, you know, it's got a Criterion release. I mean, it's got a lot of people do like it a lot, but when I say that I think it's underrated, bear in mind I am saying that I think this should be considered amongst the greatest of all films ever, all time. I think that when you say Citizen Kane and Rear Window and Seven Samurai and Gone with the Wind, you know, the next one you should say should be Great Dictator. This isn't even a movie that's in the AFI Top 100, and I think that that's ridiculous. I think it is. I've gone on about this movie before. I will go on about this movie again. I'm going to go on about this movie right now. I cannot stress to you guys enough just like how important of a movie this is. I mean, this is a movie that really softened the U.S., it kind of hardened the U.S. Perception of Hitler and Germany in World War II. I mean, you know, you look at this movie, you know, now without understanding that this predates our entry into World War II, you're like, okay, I get it. He's making fun of Hitler. It's kind of fucked up, isn't it? But and then you go and you start learning about it and you find out that he did it after, or rather, excuse me, before World War II, before we broke out into war with Japan, before he knew about the horrors going on in the concentration camp, and he wrote in his autobiography that had he known what was going on, he would not have made this movie. It's just a remarkable movie. It's a very funny movie. I've been relatively pleased that, I don't know if you've seen it, Ethan, but there's a meme going around with a picture of Charlie Chaplin's face, and he says, doesn't speak in movies for 35 years. First time he speaks, gives the most moving speech of all time. And that's very true. The speech that he gives at the end of that movie, it's one of those things that people that just don't seem to get it, like, you know, I fault this movie for, and they say that, you know, he just seems to drop out of character at the end of the movie, and he starts talking like Charlie Chaplin. You're like, motherfucker, that's exactly what he's doing. You know, he's trying to implore the world, he's trying to implore the country that, you know, we need to work through this shit without war, without, you know, with treating people equally. It's a marvelous movie. It's a fantastic movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Our top six movies of all time is one of my biggest regretted movies lists we've ever done, because I forgot about this movie and I disgusted with myself for that. I think that my number one movie of all time is Empire Strikes Back. My number two is The Great Dictator. The rest of them kind of float, but those two are fucking solid. I feel almost weird putting this on this list and putting it at the top of this list, because it is relatively well received, but I'm saying it should be more well received. I think that it sucks that people watch this movie and they're all like, he's making fun of Hitler, so fuck him. And I'm just all like, you know, to me, it's a beautiful movie. It's a perfect movie. It's a wonderful movie. So it's my number one. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think you've seen it, right?
No, I've seen it. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I have seen the movie, and it is great. It's one that I should definitely check out again soon, because I don't remember it that well.
Get the Criterion Blu-ray. I mean, if I need to, I'll loan it to you can see how awesome it is. But it's I get it that this movie is, you know, successful, but I'm telling you, I think it should be considered amongst the greatest films of all time. So that's just sure. What I'm saying is I just really think that everybody needs to check out this movie. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. And if you guys, you know, don't want to listen to me, do yourself a favor. Go to YouTube, type in Final Speech, Great Dictator, and just watch his final speech. And that's that movie. And it's moving. It's beautiful. It's, you know, it's almost clairvoyant in a sense, because again, this is before our entry into World War II. So, I mean, this is all, he's obviously, Chaplin was very political in his life, dealt with a lot of bullshit, you know, but, you know, he really did see things as it was. And he showed that he was really paying attention closely. So I think it's important. I think it's wonderful. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and I think it should be considered amongst the best ever made. So I had to put it my number one, despite the fact that there is some argument that if it is underrated, but I think it is underrated because it's not talked in the same breath as Gone with the Wind.
Sure. It's a good one. I mean, I think last time I saw it, I was just old enough to really understand that it was good and it was deep, but I wasn't old enough yet to fully appreciate that. And I should definitely check it out again.
Yeah, watch it as an adult. I mean, it's a good one. It's a good one. Okay, at this point, we're going to do our rundowns and stick a fork in this list and move on to the Ruthaw's results. Okay, let you know.
All right, well,
what's your list look like?
My number 10 is, I decided to stop talking about it, but I did mention it earlier. It was Dread. Uh-huh. Movie came out last year. I love it. Pissed off I'm not getting another one. My number 9 is Outlander, Jesus versus space aliens with Vikings.
Yep.
My number 8 is The A-Team. It got a lot of flack. A lot of people didn't like it for some reason. I thought it was a hell of a lot of fun. So, yeah, what are you going to do? My number 7 is The Chronicles of Riddick. My number 6 is Without a Clue. Number 5 is Wolverine. Number 4, Suicide Kings. Number 3, The Man in the Iron Mask. Number 2, John Carter. And number 1, Punisher.
Very good. Okay, my number 10, I'm obviously showing a little bit of my bias and what I like or don't like or stuff, but my number 10 is Chaplin, the 1992 Richard Attenborough directed biopic of Charlie Chaplin starring Robert Downey Jr. This is one of those ones, if you look up the you look up the reviews and they say, yeah, it's a pretty good movie. Chaplin's good and, you know, this is good and this is good. But they wanted to see more about his life and they wanted to see, you know, some of the turmoil from when he was a kid and, you know, more of an insight into the, into his, dating younger women and getting married so many times and, you know, the loneliness of being a brilliant artist. And I just scratched my head at that because, motherfuckers, this was based off of his autobiography. You know, this is from his point of view. I mean, they weren't going to stick shit in there. You know, they used his autobiography, and his autobiography contained what you saw in that movie, not what they were looking for. So I think expecting it to be more than that is just kind of ridiculous. And then number nine.
And correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Downey Jr. get a nomination for that?
Yes, sir. Yes, he did. But that was about it. Yeah. You know, but again, you know, I think that people watch it and they say, yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is good and rest of it. Yeah. So it's no Gandhi. I'm like, well, duh. But, yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. My number nine is a movie that likes to pop up on a lot of these lists, and it might have popped up on my guilty pleasures. It might not have. If it did, it shouldn't have. It's a good movie, goddammit, but it's Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And then my number eight is, again, it's a movie that I do think that is relatively well-received, but I think it's one of the funniest fucking movies to come out in years, and a lot of people just don't think about it, but it is Tropic Thunder, the Ben Stiller-directed movie. Once again, we got some Robert Downey Jr. action going on there. Number seven is, I don't remember the year, I want to say 1931, 1933, something like that, but the James Whale directed Bride of Frankenstein. And again, I think that this movie is relatively well received, but I do think that the original overshadowed it, and I just flat out don't get that because it is so much better than the original Frankenstein. I like the original Frankenstein. It's a good movie. It's a great movie. This one dwarfs it. It's just a better movie, plain and simple. And then the list I got into already was my number six is Munich. My number five was the Taken series. My number four was Changing Lanes. My number three was The Man in the Iron Mask. My number two was Gran Torino. And my number one most underrated movie of all time is 1941, the Charlie Chaplin-directed Great Dictator. Boom. That's what goes on with that list. We had two very different lists, didn't we, Ethan?
We did.
We did.
We did. It was funny that Men in Iron Mask ended up at the same spot.
Yeah, it is. It is. But to be fair, you gave yourself an hour or whatever to do this, and I've actually been thinking about it for, you know, 4 or 5 days at this point. And it's also one that I kind of knew was always going to be coming, so I would, you know, kind of check mark some of these in my brain and, you know, get to at a later point. So, yeah. So, good list. The only one of these that I didn't like that came up was The Chronicle of Riddick, but I don't think I saw The Chronicle of Riddick because I didn't like Pitch Black, but, you know, different folks, different strokes, all that stuff, so.
It's a completely different movie than Pitch Black, and
yeah.
As long as you accept that it's Conan in outer space, you'll understand it, and it's
okay.
Fine.
Okay, so. I'll understand that if I ever get around to seeing it. Okay, so at this point, we are going to be naming off the winner of the eighth round of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthaz, and Ethan, take it away, because you are the host. I'm just letting you up on your duties a little bit, not making you record it.
All right. Well, in this round of the, this was round eight of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthaz, we had four fine and wonderful nominees for the crown. And we had a pretty good turnout this time around. We had, not as much of a turnout as we had last time, when we had it last time, we had a very close race between Nathan Fillion and Harrison, now Harrison fucking Ford. And this one we had there was not nearly as much of a split of the voters. It was a very decisive win. Whereas we had I don't have the results in front of me. I should. Where we have Mark Hamill, Quentin Tarantino, and Peter Jackson, of course, competing against what would inevitably be the juggernaut that is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So we have the winner and the eighth inductee into the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthaz is Joseph Gordon-fucking-Levitt.
Yes. I am obviously pleased about this because he was my nominee. I don't remember numbers. We don't really need to get into numbers, but I do know that he took like 75% of the vote.
Yep.
If I remember right.
Yeah, 75% of the vote.
And I didn't
vote. So he was a decisive landslide.
And that's what I'm so proud of is I didn't vote. I know how the system works. I could have really broke the damn thing and, you know, got a really decisive victory, but I just got out there and I campaigned. You know, I went to his Twitter page. I went to all of his different, Facebook things. I actually had a couple of friends that kind of jumped on his bandwagon too. And I got them to vote and kind of get the word out. And it was like I was talking to somebody. I was talking to somebody earlier, and I said I kind of expected him to maybe win. I was hoping he was going to win because I was actually putting in the footwork, and I got out there and campaigned. But I did not expect a sweeping fucking victory, and I did not expect the vote to go down the way it did. I thought it was going to come down between him and Tarantino had the least amount of votes, if I remember right. But
him and Peter Jackson tied.
Oh, him and Peter Jackson
tied with about 7%, you know, 7.5% each.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, I'm very pleased. He's my nominee, and I don't know if I really got into detail about this, about why I chose him, but I think that, you know, somewhere along the line, I don't know if we lost sight of what Ruth Oz is supposed to be, or we kind of pushed it to where we wanted it to be, or if just kind of changed what we wanted it to be, but it was just kind of turning into an old man's list. And
well, I think this puts the punctuation on it. I think because sort of the huge thing behind the Zone of Ruth Oz is it's people who do stuff or in movies that we really want to see them just be in the movie because we'll want to see that movie, and that really is Joseph Gordon fucking Levitt. Yep. Especially, and this last year is very evident of that. You know, he did several movies, and I think we saw them all.
So. I did. They were all on my end of the year list. I liked all of his movies.
Yeah.
My favorite movie of the year had him in it. Granted, it wasn't one of his starring vehicles, but, you know, the more I think about it, the more I like Looper. I'm going to try to pick that up this weekend. I think I'm just going to buy that one because I liked it so much. But, yeah, obviously I'm pleased, and I'm especially pleased because there was some shit-talking going on from the Back to Board Boys last time. Like, yeah, anybody can win except for Robin. I mean, his legal name, Robin. And I'm like, yeah, shut the fuck up. But he's somebody that, I mean, you know, you don't have to listen to us here. Just listen to our shows over the last couple of years. And I've been a big fan of him for longer than I've been on the show. And I think you were a fan of him, but I think I really kind of pounded it into your head. And you're like, holy shit, Aaron's right again. You know, broken clock, right, twice or whatever. But obviously I'm very pleased. Obviously I'm very pleased. So that means next round around, I have to run it. God damn it. But I wasn't about ready to lose to those shit-talking guys. And, yeah, like I said, I mean, this is, you know, I ended up having almost a year to think about it. And the more I thought about it, I wanted to get some young blood in there, some fresh blood in there. So I'm glad it happened because, you know, now we're not just an old white guys club. Now it's a young white guys club. Well, and Morgan fucking motherfucking Freeman. But yeah, obviously yeah. I'm pleased. We did talk a little bit to the Bag to Board boys. I think the only one we heard back from was Chris. And, you know, he says, well, there's going to be a 0 hour push in the sequel from Peter Jackson and he's going to win. And as Ethan pointed out, yeah, it's probably going to feel like it's 14 hours and, you know, good stuff like that. So, yeah, well, obviously I'm very happy. Congratulations to Mr. Joseph Gordon motherfucking Levitt. He earned it, and it was a decisive victory. That I think I'm almost more pleased that it was that he stomped everybody more than he actually won. I mean, I was very pleased about that. And what's too bad, because I do like the other people. And I kind of wonder if, you know, maybe the timing was a little bit differently, if we might have got a stronger turnout from Mark Hamill, you know, because of the whole Star Wars thing. And you know, obviously,
yeah.
I fillet Tarantino every chance I get on this show, and you know, I think he topped he topped the last two decades for me. 2010 and the 90s. So
yeah,
I mean, just all in all, I love the guy, you know. So, and I like Peter Jackson. You know, he's cool. I like, yeah. But I think this turned out the way it should, and I'm very pleased. So thank you all for voting, and I'm going to get word out to Mr. Levitt and let him know that he can now put Joseph Gordon fucking Levitt on his business cards, and we'll go from there.
Excellent.
Yes. So I guess that's going to bring us to an end of this week's show. I don't know what we're doing next week or if we're even doing a show next week, but we will do a show again at some point. So I guess until that time, I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
And Joseph Gordon motherfucking Levitt, bitches.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's much too early in the game. But I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing, New Year? New Year's Eve. Who's gonna be the one to hold you tight? When it's exactly 12 o'clock at night, welcoming in the New Year's, New Year's Eve. Maybe I'm crazy to suppose I'd ever be the one you chose out of a thousand. I stand one little chance. Here comes the jackpot question in advance. What are you doing, New Year's, New Year's Eve? What are you doing, New Year's, New?
This podcast was cut by Uncool Aaron.